You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to MLB.com Extras. I'm Matthew Leach, talking American League East with MLB.com's AL East TV reporters. Talking about the Baltimore Orioles and taking a look at Matt Wieters, J.J. Hardy, Bud Norris, and Chris Tillman. Talking Red Sox and asking a big picture question. Are they maybe just not as good as we thought? Also looking at how they might fix the offense and Eduardo Rodriguez in that starting rotation. Talking Yankees, we'll be taking a look at Masahiro Tanaka, Didi Gregorius, and a somewhat surprisingly disappointing defense. We talk about Tampa Bay Rays. We'll be checking in on Matt Moore's rehab, Desmond Jennings, and one more look at that middle infield. And talking Blue Jays, taking a look at Jose Reyes and the rest of the Blue Jays defense. Bill, there's some real excitement building around Matt Moore. He is getting closer and closer. As we speak, he is getting close to making his first official rehab start. What is the plan for him over these coming days and weeks?
We talked to Kevin Cash about that on Monday, and he was saying, based on the fact that he's actually had four throwing, you know, whether it was adding a live BP or, you know, extended spring game, he's had four of those, and he expects over the next month probably that total to be 10 by the time he comes back. So today will be three innings and 50 pitches maybe. So just keep monitoring his progress, and, you know, hopefully the Rays are hoping, I guess, that he will be back by the first part of July.
And understandably, the plan would be to take the full 30 days that they are allowed by the CBA to make sure he is fully all the way up to speed.
That's my understanding, yes.
This has gone pretty well, hasn't it? I mean, this is the course of his rehab has been pretty encouraging, normal. It's really progressed pretty encouragingly, correct?
Well, to my knowledge and the times I've talked to him, he really hasn't had any setbacks. The only thing I've seen a couple of times is he's been maybe a little cranky about his control when he's had some of the outings. But, you know, he hasn't reported any pain with the elbow or any other parts of his body, you know, associated with getting ready to throw again. So, you know, it looks like the Tommy John surgery is always looked upon as kind of routine, and it looks like his is kind of evolving that way. But he's made the progress and should be good as new.
The another key guy who appears to maybe be on the way back is Desmond Jennings. What's his status?
I would say he's on his way back, but it's really not that encouraging because he had some at bats in a game on Monday, and Kevin Cash said, you know, yeah, he had some at bats, and his voice just really didn't sound that, you know, very excited about it. And we asked him if it was viewed as a setback, and he said no, but he still has some pain in that knee, which has been labeled as bursitis. And I know myself, I'm just surprised that, you know, he's only played 18 games. And when this thing first came out, you know, he thought he'd be back in a couple of days. And now here we are in June, and he hadn't played since April. So who knows when this guy's going to get back. I mean, he would be a big boost to the lineup. I know if you look at his numbers, and they don't look that good, you know, for the first part of the season. But I think you got to keep in mind that he went through spring training hitting about 450 and showing what he could really do. And, you know, you can't sustain that kind of pace for that long of a time. So it was unfortunate, the timing of his injury, because I think at that point, you know, you're probably pretty close to getting the flip side of the batting cycle.
He's not a guy that you would really push it with a knee either, is he? I mean, this is a guy where that the speed is a big part of his game. If he's they're not going to bring him back to kind of tolerate pain. He's going to have to be pretty much symptom-free to be back out there, isn't he?
Yeah, I think that's the correct assessment. And you know, another aspect of this, too, is playing on that artificial surface at Tropicana Field. So that's one thing that, you know, I've heard outfielders over the years, no matter how good they make that stuff, you know, it's bound to irritate you sooner or later. So I would imagine they're going to wait till that thing's pretty well cleaned up before they even put it back out there.
To move to a topic that we have talked about 1,000 different times, but it remains a topic, middle infield. Nick Franklin went deep, which was important. He really needed some good news. There's an opening for him to sort of sees some playing time, isn't it? If things go well for him.
Yes, I think that's a fair assessment. He, of course, he hit the home run the other night, and that broke an 0 for 25 spell. But he's been working on some mechanical things. And keep in mind, these are almost like early season at bats for him because he missed so much time with the oblique injury. Certainly, right now they're running Cabrera and Logan Forsythe out at short and second, which has put Jake Elmore at first. And one of the reasons they put those two, he likes that combination there, is they catch whatever's hit their way. Franklin had a couple of lapses in the field, as did Tim Beckham, who, is now on the DL. But, with the switch hitter and the fact that he can get in there left-handed, I think that certainly bodes well for him getting some more playing time.
You mentioned Beckham. How long are they going to be without him?
From all I understand, it should be the regular 15-day thing. It didn't sound like he had hurt his hamstring real bad, although we haven't gotten a lot of news about it since he left the team. So they haven't really said, it's going to be 15 days or it's going to go further than that. But, initially the reports were that they kind of caught it at the right time. It was kind of a nagging thing. And, rather than have him gimp around for a few days, why not use the spot on the roster?
It seemed like coming into the year, one of the real pluses of this roster was that there were a lot of different ways the pieces could fit together, especially in the infield. And, of course, that's kind of been a Rays hallmark for a long time. It was the team that made Ben Zobrist a star. But there were these guys who could play different positions and kind of fit in different ways. With the number of guys that they are doing without right now, to what extent are they hamstrung with some of that versatility taken away?
I don't really think the one that hurt was Looney going down. And then that way you have to, Forsythe could play a decent first base, but, with Jake Elmore over there, he's clearly out of position. He even had an error last night. It didn't end up coming back and hurting them. But not having Looney at first, I think, complicates it a little bit. But of all those guys, I don't think there's really – Forsythe is having a really nice year offensively. But, if one of them goes down, they're almost interchangeable parts, I think. So, really, the biggest thing that has affected that, to me, in my opinion, has just been Looney not being there.
I guess that's what I'm getting at, is particularly when you start looking at things like the times when they move Forsythe over to first, you kind of take one of those pieces out of the middle infield fit, and it just kind of they're not at a place where they don't have guys, but you just kind of you take away some of the different ways you can sort of mix and match.
Right, I can't stress enough how much having Cabrera and Forsythe there, catching what's hit to them, when you've got young pitching or any kind of pitching, and particularly when you're getting a good effort and you get that drop ball or thrown away ball, it just takes the wind out of their sails. And, so I think you're going to see as much of that as they can get away with. And, right now Jake Elmore is playing great offensively. So, you move him over to first and he's hit like a first baseman. Last night was really something watching how he was he got up there with the bases loaded. It's 2-0. And he gets a pitch that looks like it's, ball three. And they call it, it's a high strike. And instead of getting upset, in fact, look, they panned the cash in the dugout, and he looked like he was going to swallow a baseball. But next pitch, he pops a single in the right, and two runs score, and that proved to be the, really big runs last night. So he's been a nice plus for them, and, they just bring him up from the minors for that. So,
are there any more internal pieces, reinforcements that might be a part of this, or are they pretty much stretched that out offensively?
I think they've pretty much stretched that out offensively. I know they signed Corey Brown in the offseason, an outfield bat, and he's kind of the left-handed Joey Butler. Joey Butler has come up and done well. He's been a gift offensively. But Corey Brown was, I could have seen him coming up at some point this year. Hadn't happened yet. But other than that, Maytuk is up right now, and he gives them a little bit of energy and a right-handed bat as they face a series of left-handers the next couple of days. But I would agree with you on that, the the infield seems a little bit thin now based on some of the troops who've come in and out.
Brian, it sounded like the news on Jacoby Ellsbury this week was not good news. It seems like your understanding has been kind of measured on this for a while, but was this kind of a confirmation of what was suspected, or is this really, is there any surprising bad news in the latest announcement about how long he's going to be out?
I don't think it's very surprising. I think it's kind of what you expected. With speed being such a big part of Ellsbury's game, not just on the base pass, but he's got to run down balls in center field. You want him to be able to move. And I think that the fact that the Yankees didn't really give that much information other than that he had a strain on the outside of his knee, I think I told you it was probably going to be much more than the 15 days and possibly as much as a month. So I think at this point you're looking at best-case scenario is 5 weeks from the injury. That happened May 19, I believe. So you're probably looking here at the end of June to get Ellsbury back in a lineup. But the good news is they do expect him back. It's not a surgery situation, but they'll have to piece it together without him for the next couple weeks.
I'm now going to ask a question that I'm going to violate the rule that we lay down about not talking about things that are going to be outdated by the time anybody sees or reads them. But you're about to watch Masahiro Tanaka pitch, so we will talk in ways that can be as minimally outdated as possible.
All right.
What sort of expectations and demands are they going to have on him as he works his way back in, starting with this first start?
I think what you're looking at, and by the time somebody hears this, they'll know the answer, but you're looking at about 80 to 85 pitches in the first game here. I think you look for him to be confident, to give you four or five innings, give you a chance to get into the bullpen and to come out of Seattle with a sweep. You're not looking for him to go very deep in the game. I think really what you're looking at is here the next two starts. This could have very easily been a minor league rehab start for Tanaka, but they decided rather than have him waste those pitches at Scranton for the AAA team, why not have it here in the big league? So you're not looking for a whole lot here today. Just keep him in the game. The next start would be about 95 pitches. That's pretty close to what you're looking for from Tanaka, but he still wouldn't be all the way back. And then the third one is when you really want to see the real Tanaka. So if you think of it that way, you think of it, you're getting pitches at the big league level here that you could have been wasting in the minors, then it's sort of a bonus. Now, that's a moot point if he goes out and gets lit up, but I don't expect that to be the case. We'll see what happens. I think he'll keep the Yankees in the game. That's what he's been doing. He's been pitching pretty well even before the injury. I expect to see that kind of Tanaka the next couple times out, and then you see what you have. But I think that he'll give them everything he's got. I think that's what you've seen out of Tanaka so far. It's just going to be a shorter leash the first one or two times out off the DL.
At the back of the rotation, they answered a question that we talked about, I believe, last week. Adam Warren is the guy who stays in. Was that a difficult decision for them at all, or did that kind of make itself?
They say it was not a difficult decision. I think that we probably made more of it than there needed to be. You just looked at the results, and Chris Capuano didn't have the results. It was a short sample size, three starts, but they were three bad starts, and you couldn't look at Warren and say there was any reason to put him on the bullpen. Other than that, some of the guys in the bullpen, David Carpenter, who was designated for assignment this morning, it never clicked for him. Esmael Rogers didn't really work out, but starting pitching is so valuable, and really – Warren has been among their best starters the last four times out. He's been terrific. So there was no reason to take him out of the rotation. He's a part they're going to need to continue to count on. Who knows what happens down the road when you have Tanaka back and Ivan Nova back. But for the moment, Warren deserves to be in that rotation. And that's where he's going to stay.
It looks from the numbers, and I see enough to sort of get this impression, that maybe – quietly, Didi Gregorius is starting to pick up a little steam. How does he look to your eyes at the plate?
He's starting to hit the ball with a little more authority. I think that he had a couple hits last night. He's driving the ball. I think you're starting to see some improvements there. I think he makes you shake your head a lot. There's mistakes he makes on the base paths, and it's been a season-long thing. The fielding hasn't quite been there. I think you're seeing growing pains. You're seeing a young shortstop who really hasn't played the position all that long. It's only been a few years. It's not like he's played it from the womb here. So I think you're seeing a kid learning to play shortstop every day, on the big league level for a New York team, and that can be a little daunting at times, and everything gets magnified, but I think that you have seen some positive things from Gregorius at the plate. Obviously, they need to keep that going, but better than he'd looked in April, that's for sure. I think just from the eye test, that's what I've seen.
And then the sort of broader topic I wanted to ask about, I was looking, this team is second in the American League in strikeouts by their pitchers. That's third fewest walks, and they're basically mid-pack in home runs, and yet they're sixth in ERA. That generally points to defense. This should be a significantly improved defensive team, and frankly, I think ought to be a good defensive team, but for some reason it doesn't seem to be. Why is that?
I've been a little puzzled, especially on the left side of the infield. This is not the Chase Headley you saw last year when he was playing terrific defense. He's got 12 errors now. That's just one shy of his career high, and that was over a full season with San Diego. So whether he's got the beginning stage of the yips, that he's throwing balls, bouncing a lot of balls to third base, to first base from third base, that's a little alarming. I think that for a while now, Headley has been saying he needs to clean it up, and he's going to get it together, but you still see on a ground ball to third, you kind of wonder if he's going to make that play or not. And Gregorius, again, he played a lot better in spring training than we've seen him play defensively during the season. I think maybe there's some pressing going on there. Maybe he's stressing to make the plays, particularly in April. I think that he was trying to make a good first impression, and you saw how that worked out. I think he's calmed down a little bit, and the game has slowed down a little bit for him. But I would say defensively, the left side of the infield has been a major concern for them. Second base has been okay with Stephen Drew. Offense, obviously, you wanted to see more, but defensively, I don't think he's killed them. And Teixeira is back to playing Gold Glove first base, so that's a good sign for them. But, yeah, the left side of the infield is what I would look at. That's a problem area, and that's something for Joe Espada to really hone in on and clean up.
Do you think that is what explains, because, again, a lot of things can happen in 50 games. Do you think that infield defense is what kind of explains the disparity between the peripherals and the runs they're giving up?
I think it's part of it. I think that the pitching staff you thought was going to love working with this infield behind them, and they've been hurt a little bit by it. I don't think you can really look at the outfield defense so much. I know there are some balls that Carlos Beltran hasn't gotten to, and you know he's looked slow going after stuff, but I don't think it's killed them so much. I think that there's a lot of balls that are getting through the infield that are going as errors or as hits that guys just aren't getting to, and I think that's been a surprise to me, particularly at third base.
Probably a dumb question, because you can look at this lineup, and it's a pretty set lineup when it's healthy. Is there anything they can do? I mean, will you see a little more Brendan Ryan than you might expect once he comes back from the DL?
Yeah, I don't really think that's a great fix, because I think if you have the choice, you'd rather have the offense. So I think when Ryan comes back, they'll find a spot for him. He can back up Gregorius at short, and maybe that way you don't have to have Stephen Drew coming over to play short as much. But again, I don't think that necessarily has been the problem there. I don't think that Drew and Gregorius really have been the issue. Didi's made a couple plays that make you shake your head and scratch your head, as I said. But I think that Ryan's role is going to be pretty limited. He is what he is. I don't think that anybody's beating down the door to get Brendan Ryan back on the roster. I'd like to see Girardi give Jose Perella a little bit more of a chance here. I think you saw his live bat in spring training. You'd like to see if that translates, but it's hard for a younger player when he comes up and he's 25, 26 years old to have very limited playing time and then manage to make an impact at the big league level. So in an ideal world, you'd have at-bats for everybody. I'm not sure where they're going to come from, but that's what you saw with Garrett Jones. He hasn't played a whole lot, and he's still got the power. He can get up there and hit a big three-run homer when they need it. So it's finding those spots, and that's tough for the Yankees, where, as you said, every position kind of is cemented into place.
It's kind of a tough position with Perella, isn't it? Because it's a tough spot, and this is kind of what you're touching on. It's a tough spot for a player with his level of experience to stay in the game when he's not playing regularly. But at the same time, they can't just say, I guess they could, but they're not likely to say right now, well, Stephen Drew, you're out, Jose Perella is in. So
right.
How do they kind of manage that and make sure that Perella gets enough at-bats that his development doesn't stunt, that he doesn't, he doesn't struggle from lack of work while at the same time not just giving him the job?
Yeah, to be perfectly honest, I don't think that they are. I think it's been tough for Girardi to work Perella in while he still is waiting for Stephen Drew to come around. They want to give Drew at bats. They don't believe that was the real Stephen Drew. And maybe you did see some good signs during the Seattle series, but that's a major reason why Rob Refsnyder, who a player that they are fairly high on, is down there in AAA, because they don't want to bring a kid up who's 23, 24 years old and have him sit on the bench. So they think he's better served to be down there at AAA, continuing to learn the position at second base. Perella's got a little more experience, so that's why he's here in a bench role. But you get the sense that if the Yankees had their way, and if Brendan Ryan had been healthy, both those guys would be down in Scranton and continuing to get at-bats every day and be ready to come up and help the big club if and when they need it.
Brett, the moment is almost here. Matt Wieter's arrival is imminent as we speak. It sounds like he is in preparation to make his final minor league rehab start. What exactly is the plan for activating him and for rolling him out as a member of the actual Baltimore Orioles and not the Norfolk or Frederick or Bowie or whatever team?
It's going to be weird, right? You're not going to ask about him every week on the podcast? I don't know how we can handle that.
Somebody else will get hurt. Don't worry.
It's going to be weird. No, they want to DH him. That's the plan, is that him and Bud Norris is starting that game tonight, Norfolk. Would join the Orioles, probably fly sometime tomorrow, and meet the team in Houston. And Matt Wieters would DH Thursday, which is a day game, their series finale here in Houston. And then the plan is for him to make his debut behind the plate Friday in Cleveland. So as long as everything goes well, that's what's going to happen. In terms of moving forward beyond that, I'm not really sure. I do know that they seem pretty adamant about him catching every other day and sticking to that schedule. So you're going to see Caleb Joseph a lot still behind the plate, and he's done a pretty good job for them. And right now they have Steve Clevenger as their third catcher. Now, they could keep Steve Clevenger if they feel like he's a better bat option. They probably wouldn't keep him as a catcher per se, because they don't really have the roster flexibility to do that. But, you know, their offense has been struggling right now, so Steve Clevenger could have a chance if he continues to hit.
And the question I'm about to ask would have seemed pretty ludicrous for most of the spring, and it may yet still. But if Wieters isn't going to be able to catch every day, and I think we know if the plan, the way injuries work is, if the plan is every other day, in all reality, it'll probably even be a little less than that. They'll give him a breather here and there. And if we don't really know what he's going to do with the bat, given how little spring and how few live reps he's had, we kind of looked at this as a huge deal, as a jolt for the club, and I'm sure personally it will be a jolt. They'll be happy to see him. But how big a deal is this? How big a boost is it? Is it fair to wonder if this maybe isn't as big a boon as we would have thought or hoped it would have been earlier in the year?
Right. That's what I think. I don't know. I don't know how big of a boost it is, and I don't think anybody knows. I don't think Wieters knows. We're just going to have to wait and see how it plays out. But you know, the fact, and you touched on this, he's only playing every other day. How much can he really do for the team? And he didn't look that good this spring in his at-bats, so I'm not really sure. I don't think the Orioles feel like he's going to come in on a white horse and be their savior, but they are hoping to get something out of him. I mean, he's a free agent at the end of the year. It's a big season for him, so we'll see what happens. But, yeah, I agree. I don't think it's going to be this huge parade and this, you know, let's punch our playoff tickets now. It's just simply not going to be the case.
How much is at least according to plan, again, you know, as everybody's got a plan, as the expression goes, so they get hit in the face. The plan can obviously change, but how much is the plan for him to hit on days he's not catching? Would he DH? Would he be able to pinch hit? Would he sometimes just not be available at all on those in-between days? How will that work?
Well, if he DHs and Caleb Joseph's in the lineup, what do you do if someone gets hurt?
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
That's my luck, and, you know, that's... So you can't really do that. So, yeah, that kind of takes that option away, unless they keep Steve Clevenger on the team. So I would imagine that probably doesn't happen.
So let's talk about some other hurt guys. It's Adam Jones returned, but not all the way. What's his situation? Is he close to being back to normal, or are they still going to kind of take it easy with him for a few days?
Ish. I mean, he looked okay yesterday in his at-bats. It didn't look like he was getting a whole lot of power in the batter's box. Really, like, didn't look like he was using his legs very much. A little tentative, but having Adam Jones in the lineup makes this a better lineup. And I think there's more of a concern right now for J.J. Hardy. They feel like with Adam, he probably will play center field today. He's not 100%, but he's played through injuries before. They feel like as long as it's a case where he feels okay, and he was running and testing his ankle a little bit here in Houston yesterday before the game. So they feel like he's on the mend. He's gotten over the worst part. The swelling's gotten out. So I think he's going to be just fine.
And you mentioned Hardy. I mean, he's as big a piece of this as anybody save for Adam Jones because of what he does on both sides of the ball. What's his status? How big a worry is there with him?
Yeah, that's more worrisome because he admitted to being nervous, and that really doesn't happen too much in the major leagues. Guys are very well trained to tell the media, no matter what they feel like or no matter what they're going through, that's not that big of a deal. And the fact that JJ was frustrated and he admitted that he was nervous, it could be more than a day or two thing. He was sidelined for about a month with an oblique injury in 2011. So he's a guy who has a history, and no one's calling it oblique. Everyone hates using that word, but the left side soreness very often means it's an oblique injury. So I'd be surprised if he was back in that lineup today. I think they're going to try and really get out in front of it. And as you mentioned, he's a big piece, so this could be very worrisome.
We talked about this some last week, but between just the simple fact of doing without guys and also just the amount of shuttling in and out they've done in this lineup and the position player roster, how big a factor do you think all of that is in the fact that this offense has not achieved, I think, what most people would say would have been their expectations for it?
Yeah, I think that's part of it. Losing Nelson Cruz is also a huge part of it, and Nick Markakis. Going into yesterday's game, they had only scored three fewer runs than a year ago. So I don't know if it's being magnified more this year because of the fact that they aren't winning these close ball games. I know the offense obviously isn't doing that well, but that stat certainly puts things in perspective a little bit. So I think a lot of the guys haven't been able to replicate what they thought. People haven't stepped up, these peers. Delman Young, Jimmy Paredes is coming back down to earth here. So they've really struggled, and they've really made a living off of guys like Pearson Young, who they feel like are undervalued acquisitions. None of those guys are doing what they thought they would. And you can put Travis Snyder in that group as well. He really hasn't been what he was built to be. So you got a lot of guys not living up to expectations.
And it seems like if one thing could sort this club out, it would be for their one absent starter and their one struggling starter to get back to where they're expected to be and get that rotation winning games for them. So one of those guys, the guy who's currently out, Bud Norris, had what looks like a good news, bad news most recent minor league start. 7 Ks and no walks, very encouraging. 4 runs in 5 innings, less encouraging. What did you hear about that game?
Yeah, he was a little bit better. I think it'll kind of be based off of what happens tonight if he gets activated and the next step. I felt like endurance was a little bit of an issue still because he had lost so much weight when he was sick. He was really weak, and he started to kind of show towards that rehab outing. So they felt encouraged. He felt pretty good early on. I think tonight will be, like I said, the big test here to determine whether Bud's ready to come up and help this team. But I agree, a big difference has been Bud Norris, who won 15 games for them last year, and the inconsistency of their opening day guy, Chris Tillman. You just simply can't win ball games if your opening day guy isn't able to give you quality outings. And Chris Tillman has a 6.10 ERA over his last 7 games. So it's really been a combination of a lot of things for the Orioles.
And that is the other guy I wanted to ask you about. We've touched on him a little bit, haven't really delved anything on Tillman. And I know that Norris has been the bigger problem in the rotation when he was in there. But relative to expectations, Tillman has really been a surprise. And to me, what stands out is walks. I mean, when he took that step forward, starting in 2012, he reined his walks in, and he's never been that pinpoint guy, but he hasn't walked a lot of guys. This year, he's walking more than a batter every other inning. A lot of things can go into that, but when you see it, is it a matter of approach and being tentative? Is it a matter of just missing, mechanical? What do you see when you see Chris Tillman walking as many guys as he is?
I think he's just not able to put guys away. You know, he's always struggled in the first inning or two over his career. That's always been the inning to kind of get to him if you're going to. But he hasn't been able to put guys away when he's had the opportunity to. And that's kind of been the biggest difference for him. And, you know, I don't think it's anything mechanical or mental. He seems to be in a pretty good place. And he knows what it's like to struggle. He's had ups and downs before in the major leagues. But it's really just a matter of being more consistent. And that's what they're going to have to hope that he kind of finds here in June and in July and August and really gets on a run, because they're not a good team without him. They need Chris Tillman to succeed. So I just think, like I said, it's a matter of bearing down, winning those tough battles, and being able to put guys away at opportune moments, which so far he really hasn't been able to do.
Jose Reyes has been back for about a week now. How does he look at the plate to you?
He's looked pretty good at the plate, actually. His timing has been probably a little bit better than what he was expecting coming back. The bigger issue with him so far has just been defensively. It seems like that range has continued to diminish over even the last couple of years, where it was a problem before, and it's probably going to be something the Blue Jays are going to have to live with this entire season until maybe potentially looking at a position change at some point in the future, but that's not going to happen this year. So they're going to have to get by with that now, but there's no question that the upside in the bat is a huge upgrade over Ryan Goins, who was there before. So there's no question about who should be playing shortstop, but they're just going to have to get a lot of value of that bat to kind of make up for some of the deficiencies that he's kind of developed elsewhere.
Well, you just jumped ahead about two questions of mine, so we're going to have to cover some ground that you just started to cover. There does seem to be a lot of talk about his defense, and the numbers are very unkind, but full-season defensive numbers, even the best ones, can be unreliable, never mind numbers for a month or two. The guy's still got some speed. How is it happening that his range is diminishing? Are there issues with his hands as well? I mean, just as you watch him play shortstop, what do you see from him as a defensive shortstop?
Yeah, I mean, that's the one part of all of this that's a little bit, confusing almost, is that, on the base paths, I mean, he's not a 50 stolen base guy by any means anymore, but he still moves very well in the base paths. He's still a threat to run at any given time, and he's always going to be able to take that extra base. But when it comes defensively, he's just it certainly seems like he's lost a step, and I think everyone that you talk to within the organization would agree with that. He doesn't really agree with that. He still thinks he's where he was at a few years ago, but everybody else, you can just see with your eyes that he's just not getting the jumps on balls that he used to back even in the 1 year when he was with Miami, and then previously with the Mets before that. He had a lot of trouble last year going to his left. It seems like this year it's kind of been to the right as well, and it just seems like anything that's not hit within a couple of feet of really him on either direction, that he's having a lot of trouble getting to that ball. The one thing he still does have is he still has a very good, strong throwing arm, so he can make up for a little bit of lack of range with that. He can compensate for it with the arm. But he's just having a lot of trouble getting to balls right now, and that's probably not an issue that's going to go away. This is something the Blue Jays are just going to have to live with, because there's really no other alternative. And one thing that a lot of people in Toronto have been talking about was, maybe giving Ryan Goins more playing time. That's just not going to happen. Ryan Goins doesn't have enough of a bat to really justify moving Jose Reyes out of shortstop. There's too much value in having Jose Reyes up the middle at short because of that bat. And while there might be, some talk later on down the road about what to do with Jose Reyes, that's not going to happen this year. The Blue Jays are going to have to live with that over the next 4 months.
If they are scoring a ton of runs as they are and allowing a ton of runs as they are, even if we're not talking about a permanent position switch or a full-time somebody else playing shortstop, are there ways they can massage this at all? Are there ways that on a day when you've got a particularly ground ball-oriented pitcher, he gets a day at DH maybe? Is there any kind of stopping short of radical change? Are there little things they can do to paper over this at all, or is it really just as black and white as Jose Reyes is the shortstop for as long as he's healthy and that's the way it is?
I really think it is as black and white as you say right there. And that's probably not going to be the case beyond this year. I would be surprised if the Blue Jays don't eventually address this. But the way the team is configured right now, it just doesn't set itself up very well to do those type of things. I would think that eventually, now that Jose Bautista is back in right field, that opens up the DH spot. There probably are going to be times where you can massage it every now and then and maybe get Reyes a game at DH a week or so. But I mean, this is also the problem with this entire situation as well, is you have to manage the personalities within that clubhouse, and I don't think that's something the Blue Jays are really prepared to make a drastic step on right now. because Jose Reyes has been around for a very long time. He's got a long track record of success, and you know, and any conversation that you have with him, he's very adamant that he can still play a very good shortstop. And while the, you know, the defensive metrics don't really show that, and while, you know, just even watching with your eyes don't really show that, he's a firm believer in his abilities there, and I don't think he's going to move off that position easily anytime soon.
They're obviously not going to say publicly. I mean, that's not how it works, but what's your impression of what the pitchers think? I guess what I would ask is, do the pitchers agree with him?
Yeah, this is something that's kind of, to me, first started last year. I think everyone gave him, you know, a free pass in 2013, especially he suffered that major ankle injury and just didn't look as himself in 2013. And, you know, last year is kind of when I started hearing some talk about it. And, you know, I think a lot of people in the clubhouse, a lot of the pitchers can get frustrated at times, but I think there's almost a resignation to a certain extent. But, you know, the one time you really do notice it is after you have someone else playing the position. Like when Reyes was on the DL, there was a couple weeks straight where Goins was playing up the middle, and Goins is, you know, all glove and not really much with the bat. But, you know, we got to see kind of firsthand over a couple weeks just how much of an impact having a guy with a solid glove up the middle can do, and you would hear some pitchers kind of go out of their way to praise Goins and his abilities there. And then as soon as the conversation turns to Reyes, they obviously get a little bit hesitant, but you can kind of read between the lines a little bit. And so I think it impacts everybody, but you know, it's a difficult situation, something the Blue Jays are going to have to kind of navigate their way through. But, you know, and a lot of people are talking about shortstop, but, I mean, the defensive issues also go beyond that on this team as well. I mean, it's been a major, major weakness on this roster so far this year. Outfield defense was supposed to be something that they addressed in the offseason, was supposed to be a strength of this team, and that's probably been even bigger weakness than shortstop with Reyes. It's just something that has, some holes have been exposed on the team defensively, and I think that's why there's been so much talk about Reyes, just because there's been so many incidents this year where it seems like, you know, a makeable play doesn't get made, and suddenly the inning goes lopsided and things go south for the pitcher. So it's kind of, there's just been so many examples of that this year that defense has been a big topic of conversation.
And that is, you know, another thing I wanted to ask you about is, we talk all the time about the pitching, and it hasn't been good enough. I mean, they're I think 13th in starters ERA and 14th in relievers. I'm sorry, backwards. 14th in starters ERA, 13th in relievers ERA. So, you know, obviously the pitchers haven't been good enough. But how much, when we talk about the pitching, this old Bill James quote is something like, you know, much of what we talk about when we talk about pitching, we actually mean defense or something. I butchered it, but that's essentially the idea. When we talk about the Blue Jays pitching, how much are we actually talking about the defense when we look at them not preventing runs better?
I think early on, I think most of it was on the pitching staff. But lately, I think the pitching staff has actually improved quite a bit, probably more so than the numbers indicate. And there's just been too many examples. I mean, to a certain extent, it's very predictable because when Bautista was out in right field, when he was not able to play right field, there was many games where the Blue Jays had two infielders in the outfield. They had Chris Colabello in left or in right, and then a lot of times they would have Danny Valencia in left field. And the only natural outfielder they had out there was Kevin Pillar, and Kevin Pillar has been playing a great center field, but there's only so much he can do. And he's, you know, they've been exposed for that, and that was something John Gibbons said during the weekend in Minnesota. He said, you know, we got exposed today, and it's something that's been happening quite a bit. And whenever you hear a manager say something like that, it's a little bit jarring, and no one's pointing the finger at a guy like Colabello or Valencia because they're playing at a position, they're doing the best that they possibly can, but you know, the injuries and then the lack of depth that they've had not being able to come up. And there's been a lot of fly balls that I would consider routine or ones that might be slightly difficult, but ones that you would expect outfielders to make. And they've been dropping in, and that cost them two games in Minnesota. And when you're, you know, trying to stay afloat in the AL East and in a division that's very tight this year, you can't be giving games away like that. And that's something the Blue Jays have been doing too much of.
Ian, the Red Sox are flagging once again. They are 22-29, which by my count is the second worst record in the American League. Their minus 48 run differential is worst in the American League. And we're now a third of the way through the season. How close are we to maybe beginning to think that those of us who are really high on this team might have just been wrong?
We're getting pretty close, Matthew. I mean, this is a homestand where the Red Sox really need to just rip off a bunch of wins here to just show people that, you know, this team should be kept together. Because if they don't, you know, Ben Cherington is going to have to do something drastic. Ownership is going to have to do something drastic. The Red Sox are not about to sit there as an organization and watch their team finish in last place for the third time in the last 4 years. There's a lot of disenchantment here from the fan base to the media to the clubhouse to the front office to ownership everywhere. There's just a lot of misery going on in Boston right now. So, yeah, this is kind of put up or shut up for these Red Sox right now.
What is the front office's take? I mean, there are two different ways to look at this, and a lot of weird things can happen even in 50 games. There have been excellent teams that had a bad 50-game stretch. So when the front office looks at this club, what do they see?
You know, I think the front office right now is just a little baffled that they generally expect that veteran players are going to live up to their track record, and they just haven't seen that almost across the board. You look up and down that Red Sox lineup, and who really has the statistics right now that you expected? You know, I could cite Dustin Pedroia as one guy who's pretty much having the season you'd expect. But, you know, aside from that, you really don't see a lot of guys that are doing what you expected. There's obviously been a couple things that were unforeseen. You didn't expect them to lose both their projected catchers. You know, Ryan Hennigan hopefully will be back around the All-Star break. Pitching has been up and down, certainly. Not quite as good as they expected, although it's been better lately, and now you have Eduardo Rodriguez, who's hopefully going to lift that. But, they're just confused about why guys, aren't producing up to their expected level of performance, and they're trying to figure out why.
We'll talk about the pitching in a bit, but, you know, one of the things about this offense that I think we talked about in the offseason in the spring was it was reminiscent, at least on paper, of the 13 offense in that there were just so many options, and it seemed like the one thing that would be really hard to figure would be that it wouldn't work because they just had so many guys that could kind of keep throwing at it. And, well, if that doesn't work, then they got this. If that doesn't work, they got this. And this is a very long setup for what's a pretty simple question. Are there still alternatives? Are there still options within the organization that they can throw at this problem and try and make the offense more productive, or have they pretty much exhausted all the realistic in-house options?
Yeah, you know, you look at a guy like, Alan Craig, and I know he was taken off the 40-man roster and all that, so the Red Sox just trying to protect themselves. But, you know, you can't write off him forever and just think this guy is never going to be a good player again. So he's a guy that certainly he's down at Pawtucket. He's had some good results lately. If he's a guy, if he could ever get back on track, that's an option who could lift their offense a little bit. Daniel Nava had the same type of start last year and then wound up having a pretty decent season. So he's another guy who, you know, he can't be as bad as he's playing right now. So they're just hoping that some of these options that they had when the season started, they're hoping some of these guys can just, round back into form.
On the pitching side, we've talked a good bit about, one major internal option, which is Eduardo Rodriguez, and he was pretty dazzling in his debut. First of all, just from sort of a scouting perspective, seeing him with your own eyes, was he what you expected, or was he maybe more than you thought you might see in a first big league start?
Yeah, I think he was pretty impressive. You know, you never know quite what to expect when a guy makes his first major league start, you know, whether the nerves are going to get to him or whatever, but he was just fearless out there and, pinpoint control, really, and everything you could have hoped for. Now, you know, you'll see him again this week to see, if he can do it again. But certainly they have room in the rotation for a guy like that. The Red Sox they didn't just need results. They needed kind of a shot in the arm in terms of just somebody who brought a little, energy to the team, sort of a new guy to come in there. And, unfortunately, he pitched that game and they lost the next three games, which wasn't what they were looking for. So they're hoping that he can pitch again well this week, and then they can kind of maybe feed off that a little bit and something can become contagious, because it just seems that nothing has stuck on this Red Sox team. They'll play a couple good games in a row and then lose four or five in a row.
When we talked before Rodriguez's start, it seemed like the idea was he'd get one, go back down, and they would just sort of resume the way things were. Was it as simple as he was so good that they couldn't not give him another?
Yeah, exactly. When somebody pitches that well and the Red Sox are where they are in the standings, you sort of owe it to yourself as an organization to say, okay, is this guy ready right now? And I think it also, you know, Matthew, creates a little competition within the organization and within that rotation. You saw Joe Kelly turn in a better game the other day. So maybe some of these guys, just the natural competitor in them, you know, these guys don't want to give up their spot either. So when you have Rodriguez lurking, maybe it, you know, puts some of the other guys on edge and gets some better performance out of those guys too.
Meanwhile, Justin Masterson goes on a minor league rehab start and gets five outs and allows five base runners, more walks and strikeouts. Some of the same kind of ugly stuff we've been seeing. I realize the only thing worse than scouting the stats in the major leagues is scouting the stats in a minor league rehab assignment. So was there any reason to think that was better than it looked, or was that pretty much bad news?
Yeah, I think that was bad news. They were really hopeful that he would come out and be sharp. And, you know, I guess we'll see him again here in a few days. But, you know, this is a guy who's certainly on a tight leash. He's not on a contract that makes it hard to cut him loose. I mean, he signed a one-year deal. They were really hoping that he could give them a good year, but if it's pretty apparent, you know, the next couple of weeks, that's not going to happen. You know, they simply, you know, maybe they make him a long man for a while or a middle man or something like that, or maybe they just simply part ways and say, okay, you know, we thought this guy could come back from an injury-plagued season last year, and it just didn't work. So I think the next couple of weeks are going to be very telling on Justin Masterson, you know, how much longer he's going to last here with the Red Sox.
And within this same mix, there's Stephen Wright, who's pitched pretty well. He's pitched better than a lot of the other guys in the rotation. Is he in there for a while? Is this maybe a Rodriguez Wright competition as they shape up the rotation beyond the guys who seem to be safe in Buchholz, Miley, and Porcello? How do those back spots kind of shake down? We talked about a couple of them, but how do those pieces fit together?
Yeah, and I think Rodriguez clearly has the best upside here. So if he looks like he's ready to go on a run, I think he stays in that rotation. If you have an excess, you know, Stephen Wright is just the perfect sort of swing man. You know, he can go with the knuckleball. He can go from the bullpen. He can go. He can start. He can pitch in Pawtucket to provide depth down there. He still has options. So I think that Wright is more of the depth guy right now, and Rodriguez has more of the inside track to really stick in this rotation for a while.
So is this an option? We were talking more about Rodriguez as an option maybe in July. We're now at a point where he can sort of make it so that as long as he keeps pitching well in the big leagues, he keeps pitching in the big leagues?
I think so, yeah. I mean, the way the season's gone for the Red Sox, ideally they would have waited till around July, but, you know, they just don't have that luxury right now. So if this guy looks like he's ready to go, you know, they're not going to hold him back. And his next start will be really telling to see, you know, where they go with him going forward. But, you know, right now I sort of expect that, you know, Eduardo Rodriguez will be here in Boston for a while, and they'll figure out the rest of the rotation from there.
What do you think is most likely? I mean, do you think that the most likely thing is that it's Kelly and Rodriguez going forward, or do you think that they may make a move with Kelly as well? I mean, again, tell me if I'm wrong. It seems like there are three guys who, as long as they don't completely blow up, are in pretty good shape, and two spots where it's still kind of, we don't know.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. I mean, Buchholz and Porcello and Miley, those three guys are going to be in your rotation here, probably for the rest of the year, barring injury or just a major, major drop in performance. And, you know, Joe Kelly had one pretty good outing, but, you know, he's kind of at the point where he's in that Masterson's boat. He's got to really show them, you know, that he belongs in the rotation, that he can be consistent. You know, Joe Kelly, we've talked about this a number of times, but I really think that, you know, unlike Masterson, if it doesn't work for Kelly in the rotation, I think he could really give them a good weapon out of the bullpen, too, with the stuff he has. So I think that sort of leaving their options open on Kelly, they're giving him every opportunity right now to prove that he should be in that rotation. So I think they'd like to keep him in the rotation, but that's up to Joe Kelly and the way he performs here going forward.
This is MLB.com Extras. Thanks, everybody, for listening.